It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Adam Engst from Tidbits joins Andy and Alex. We're talking about the latest news. Yes, well, it's a Mac rumor, but there's Mac news. And, of course, a lot about iOS, customer satisfaction, and more. It's all next, Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 293, recorded April 3rd, 2012. Holy penetration, Batman! Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker who needs stock video clips, photos, illustrations, music tracks, or sound effects, check out Pond5 for instant downloads at the best prices anywhere. Pond5.com. And to save 25% this month, use the offer code TWIT25. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. And don't forget to use the offer code MACBREAK to get two bonus months with purchase. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Macintosh needs in obsessive thoroughness, starting... And we're proud of it. Mighty proud of it.
It's compulsive.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's Adam Engst of the Tidbit, the Tidbits guy with his giant penguin. Hey, Adam, that's not a Linux penguin. That's not a tux.
No. This penguin came all the way from Australia. It must have just gotten lost, given that you still have to go a hell of a long way to get to Antarctica.
Very nice to see you. Welcome back. Tidbits.com, the longest running Macintosh publication out there, longest still running. There are older ones.
Years,
there are older
years
ones
coming up.
Yeah, Byte. I think Byte did a Macintosh article in 1984, but they're not. That's why you win the title.
Well, and I do have to allow Macworld. They came online late to the game, so
right.
We're still going for the online record.
All right, nice to have you, Adam. It's great to have you. Also here for we'll enjoy them while we can.
2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row. Mr. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps. He's a traveling man.
Yes.
Oh, shoot. I forgot. I was looking at your new Mophie case, which I'm sure you're going to talk about. I have a Thunderbolt drive, but I left it I left it at home.
Oh, you got the new one?
I got one from...
Is that the Elgato?
Yeah, something like that. It's 128. Well, I don't know. I had to borrow a cable from you, $50. It doesn't come with a cable.
Well, because it's $50. Then it would affect their
bottom line.
Their bottom line. So it's
going to affect my bottom line instead.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
They are fast, though.
Well, yeah, and they're small.
Right.
They're like a really good bantamweight fighter. Fast, but small.
Yeah.
Don't expect capacity. Also here, Andy Yanako, the Chicago Sun-Times, and his favorite squirrel.
There you go. It's definitely the Travis Bickle of a drive interface.
It is. It's feisty.
Small, but very, very dangerous.
Feisty. Yeah. So, okay, forget the news. I got a tech support question for you guys.
Uh-oh. Here we go. You've come to the right place.
It's driving me crazy. So, as I was explaining before the show, I foolishly, there's this thing called Liquipel. They were at CES where they spray your iPhone or your device with a... nano coating that's supposed to make it waterproof.
Turns out
it's not. Okay.
Not so much.
We don't have to belabor it. If you want to watch iPad today, you can see me dunk my phone. So I brought it in yesterday to my little favorite iPhone repair place. These guys are great. They're such geeks. And they take it apart. They replace every piece. Still doesn't work. They said, we think it's probably the logic board. And, you might as well at that point bring it to Apple and look at a new phone. And Apple's very nice. And I don't know if they have to do this because I didn't have Apple Care. But I told them right up front. I said, the phone is wet. It got wet. And he looks in he can look in the headphone port and see the red strip. Yeah. He said, yeah, it got wet. And he took out the SIM. He said, wow. Because the SIM apparently caught on fire or something.
Wow.
It's like, he said, you're going to have to get a new SIM because this is like, it's not, I said, is that corrosion? He said, I don't think it's corrosion. I think it's a short circuit. It like melted. So it was like
impressive.
Nasty, right?
Impressive.
I mean, it didn't just go down. It went down hard. And I didn't bring up that I had intentionally dunked it in a glass of water. But when he brought
you were open but not completely open.
Well, the funny thing is when he brought it back, he said, I don't want to say anything, but is this because of the Liquid Pell thing you did on iPad? I said, yeah, it is. I said, but I don't like to pull rank. I never like to say, hey, do you know who I am? I'm Leo Laporte. Could you fix my phone? And he had made me the offer before,
right?
You know, any of that. So it was nice. So that was good. I don't know if they have to do it. I think the Genius has some leeway in that.
Yeah.
He said, like, if we can't recover any of the components, like if a car drove over it and it smashed, I can't give you a new phone because I can't. I said, you're going to try to recover components from this scorched phone? He said, oh, yeah, we can get some of this stuff back. And so that's why they'll give you, for $200, they'll give you a new phone. Anyway, so I got a brand new one. And then I'm doing the iCloud restore, and I remember, oh, yeah, because I did this with the new iPad, waiting, everything. Oh, you know, nothing's restoring. Yeah. So I thought, oh, no problem, because I have backed this up. I will bring it to my computer, and I synced it with iTunes. Still waiting.
You know, there's a funny little thing to get that started.
I know you can double tap. I know that thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm not. I have hundreds of apps.
But doesn't it just start after that?
No.
After you double tap it?
No. I've been double tapping all day.
So usually there's one that says loading.
That's the problem. Is there's like one stuck? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So what do? You pause that one?
Well, I think I've tried double tapping. I was doing some tests with iCloud backups and restores to see what iBooks would do with its data. And I ran into this at one point, and I think I ended up actually shutting the phone off and back on and then double tapping on the one that was loading. And eventually it did it. It wasn't happy about it, though. It was not something where I was
extremely annoying. And because they now have the iCloud restore, even if you hook it up to the computer,
it wants to do it.
It wants to do it over the
air. From iCloud. If you started with, I'm going to restore from iCloud, it gets into that loop. Because didn't you have that when you first started? Because now it's in that loop. If you said, I want to restore from my computer, it will restore from your computer.
So that's what you should do.
Well, if you want to do that.
But what you can do is you can go into, I forget what it is, general, blah, 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 and do a total erase all content and reset.
That's what I did, yeah. And
then
start over.
Different backup.
Yeah. That's what I did with the iPad.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is all because at one point I mentioned the word iCloud.
Right, so you got to start over again if you want to.
And the phone says, but no, dude.
Which is useful. Like, for instance, for me, my iPhone got replaced last week, too. I didn't dunk it in any water.
Why'd yours get replaced?
So it stopped charging. Like, it would slowly, every once in a while you had to do it a couple times, and then the computer wouldn't recognize it. And this is where iCloud became really useful, because I backed it up to iCloud. It would still see iCloud, of course.
Right.
So while it still had a charge, I backed it all up to iCloud, and then I took it into the Apple Store, and I just got a new one. And then they
just swapped it, right? Because it's still under warranty. It's less than a year old.
It's still under warranty. I didn't dunk it in water.
So I felt so grateful. I bought the AppleCare Pro or Plus or whatever they call it.
I did that.
He says I don't get a commission. I said I know, but I'm just so grateful that you gave me a new phone for $200. What I'm an idiot. But anyway, I bought the additional AppleCare Plus. What the hell is that I just bought?
It's pretty much, for $100, you're going to get a new iPhone if you break it.
No matter
what. If you dunk it in water, step on it, drop it out of the car.
I need that.
So you just have to bring the carcass over and you'll get it.
Bring on the Liquid Pell.
Yeah, see, that's what you need
before
that.
Because now, I don't mind because I can get another one. I got such hate mail. People said, why did you do that? Well, the problem was, once I agreed to have my phone Liquid Pelled,
right.
You know, Huffington Post talks about it, says, if it works, it's great. They don't try it. You got to try it.
Right.
Right? So I tried it so you don't have to do it, Andy, and you don't have to do it, Alex, and you don't have to do it, and you don't have – nobody has to do this. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I've seen those products before. I've had people make those offers to me. Hey, we'll send you over a sample. We'll whatever, your phone. And I'm like, I'll take that meeting, but you're going to bring one of your own phones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm going to try it out because I have heard of that specific product, and immediately I thought of this ad that I once saw in the back of some magazine about this special magic paint that repels traffic radar. it's easy for you to convince people to, like, paint their cars this magic stuff, but then, you know, you're telling me that this works in a way that I don't believe that physics actually works.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't think so.
Well,
didn't you do all those tests with cat litter and rice and whatnot for drying stuff out too, Andy? Did.
The difference there was I called T-Mobile and said, "Can you send me 6 phones that will never ever get back again?"
Oh, that's neat. And by the way, which works the best for future reference?
The best answer is two answers: the either dry rice or silicate based cat litter. Just put it inside a sealed plastic container, like a Ziploc bag or a piece of Tupperware. Completely cover it in this stuff. Seal it up. Give it about a day, and by the end of the day, most any moisture that could have been withdrawn from the phone will be withdrawn for it. Or if you happen to know somebody who uses a hearing aid, they actually probably own a special device that's built specifically to dry out hearing aids from whatever moisture they get involved in. You drop it in the side. I actually borrowed one of these for the test. You drop it in this machine, give it about, I think it's like a 2-hour cycle, and it's just this amazing little thing that just does nothing but remove moisture from anything that's inside that little coffin. But it's a $200 thing. You're probably not going to have that in your kitchen pantry when you do your laundry.
There's another thing you could do. I save those little bags that say "Do not eat."
Right.
I don't eat them.
That's good. That's a good start.
You have a collection of these, Leo?
I save them, put them in Tupperware, seal them.
Because he's not eating them. They pile up.
And you can bake them to desiccate them again if they've been exposed to the air, because they suck moisture. But they're designed to keep electronics dry. So we had some industrial strength ones. I baked them in my oven. Be careful. Preheat the oven, because you could I actually melted the bags in the second time. Yeah. But
that's why rice is my recommendation. You probably already have that in your pantry. Also, if you want to get something, the kitty litter that's special, it's the crystal type kitty litter, not the kind with the clay in it. You can probably get that at the drugstore at Walgreens, like next to your hotel, like late at night if it happens while you're traveling.
That's good to know.
I put my 3GS went through the warm cycle.
That's good.
And we put it in rice for 3 days and popped it out, and it worked just fine.
Yeah, often it does. The thing is, and in Liquipel's defense, they said, well, Leo, you did it wrong.
Of course.
And they just put it in water.
Sorry, your dog died. Even though you used the magical holistic healing gel that we sent you, you must have used it wrong. You didn't believe hard enough. You killed your dog.
They said, they send you a thing that says, don't get it wet. So that was the first thing, don't get it wet. And then
so it calls water as long as you never get the phone wet.
It says waterproof on the back of the case. On the front, it gives you a thing that says, don't get it wet. But if you get it wet, and they're right on this, you do all the things that you all know. You pull the battery. Oh, it's an iPhone. But you pull the battery if it's not an iPhone. Right. You don't try to turn it on. They say don't shake it, because you don't want to disperse the water. Just stand it up, let it drain, and let it dry. And don't try to use it for days and days and days. And, of course, I didn't do any of that stuff. I shook it. I turned it on. Well, I was trying to say, did it still work? Now, of course, it's all the same things they do at CES. They did see it. I mean, I wasn't doing anything they didn't do. But understand, if you do decide to Liquipel your phone, don't get it wet, would be my advice.
One other piece of advice. On any circumstances, it's always worth taking it to the Apple store and being very honest about what happened.
Yes. They were great.
Well, not only because they'll might swap it out for $199, but also because I talk to a lot of people who work in Genius Bars in a lot of different stores, and it seems as though culturally, not officially, but culturally, there is an unspoken policy of the "we're awesome" policy,
right,
that says that if this person tried to take care of their phone, they're going to try to take care of the customer, right. And oftentimes that means that they will send you out with a new phone and a wag of the finger and saying, "Don't ever do this again. We now have your number. We know that you're not going to we're not going to do this again for you, but they might actually replace it for you." And that actually goes double when there's a brand new model of anything mobile that comes out, like the new iPad or when the new iPhone comes out. They're probably going to be more. They're also going to be more interested in saying, "Well, gee, this guy dropped the phone, and that was his fault. That breaks the warranty." But we're kind of interested in seeing why it broke under these circumstances. So there's by warranty, they're not required to do anything except for to I'm going to dominate this. Nobody's supposed to go over your phone. But it's always worth coming in and being completely honest about what happened. If the worst that can happen is that they'll offer you sympathy and support, the best thing that could happen is they might send you home with a replacement phone.
I got an email from an Apple genius who said, don't quote me, but they give us a lot of leeway. We do, at the end of the day, have to justify it to our manager. So you can't just be kind of go crazy, but they give us a lot of leeway. And he says, if people are nice, we'll be nice back.
Well, and it's incredible. I actually went out on my Twitter feed and solicited feedback from people, good and bad. Actually, I didn't lead the interrogation by saying, but I was getting so many stories exactly like that, where I had an accident with it, they replaced it for me, or I bought something for my mom. I thought that it had an HDMI cable with it. It didn't. They just simply took one off the peg and gave it to me. Buying something from Apple through the Apple Store is such a huge value add. It's one of the four or five things you could probably list that says that I don't know how other manufacturers can compete with Apple at certain things like customer service.
Yeah. Well, I've bought the iPhones at
AT&T and Verizon and Apple, and I've just gotten to the point now I just only go to an Apple store to buy it because it's just like it's just so much less trouble. My Apple Care gets added automatically. I get taken care of. It's quick. It's easy. It's, you know, it's you.
Well, to their credit, they never asked me, did you buy this here?
No. I'm just saying that, but I'm saying that if you bring, I'm just, what I'm saying is that the general experience is so good.
I mean, overall.
You know, it's just, it feels like it should be simple, like you, but you know that there's just an immense amount of work to get that kind of stuff.
And as the chat room is pointing out, that's why you're paying the extra price.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. The Apple stuff costs more because they continue to give you support. Most of the PC companies, right. Unbundled support effectively. They got the price way, way down, but they don't, you know, you get
on 5% margin, what you get is.
You're not going to get support because you're not paying for it.
Yeah.
There's a deli in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Zingerman's.
Oh, and, I love Zingerman's. Yes.
Everyone loves Zingerman's, but they actually have this really interesting customer service policy, which is that everyone, down to the lowliest, you know, cashier, can make something right for an unhappy customer up to $100.
Wow.
Without asking anyone. And it's basically, I mean, because I was there once after Mac Hack, and forget what it was. They were tasting, you know, having tastings of something, and they ran out, you know, just as we were getting there. And the woman was like, oh, hang on a second. She reaches up on the shelf and pulls down, you know, another box of these, you know, expensive Spanish chocolate covered figs or something, and hands us, you know, so we get samples too. And it was just, you know, it was one of those things. She was like, yeah, that you go the little bit of an extra way and you get a customer for life.
Well, we have that policy here at Twit. Anybody in the Twit office can make anybody whole up to $100. If you have a problem with your podcast, you tell us, and we will make it. Actually, that's kind of true, and I don't really want to extend that offer because we accidentally, we made a little mistake on the factory floor when we were putting out Twit on Sunday. We put out, you know, we have Twit HD. It's the only show right now where we have a 720p version. That's big. It's like almost 2 gigabytes. And we put, and it was the wrong, it was last week's. So if anybody downloaded the wrong podcast from Twit on Sunday, you have our deepest apologies, and we will, at no charge to you, offer you last week's podcast completely free. No cost to you.
And you'll even throw in free undercoating.
Yes.
On Liquipel. All model
you all get Liquipel. So it's not surprising then when you hear stories like that, that things like this story, Apple jumps 10 places to get to the number one consumer brand in Japan. I mean, I think it's already probably the number one consumer brand in the U.S., but Japan's kind of a surprise because Apple's not traditionally done well overseas.
No, and they have. And you always wonder how well the iPhone's going to do in places like Japan because the phones there are so futuristic.
Advanced.
I mean, they're just so, you know, they all have these long phones, these long white phones.
They're basically, I think they're personal computers. Instead of having a personal computer, they've got a phone. Yeah.
Everyone's watching TV on their phone in the subway. It's crazy. So, yeah, but... You know,
this is a J.D. Power and Associates, you know, the thing that the car companies always talk about. Customer satisfaction survey. It's not true across the board, but number one in consumer brands in Japan. Oh, I'm sorry. This is not. This is the Nikkei BP Consulting survey. This is a different survey. J.D. Power is in the U.S. Number one, scoring 90.5 points out of 100 for total brand power. Then Google. Then Uniqlo. Uniqlo.
Uniqlo.
Yeah. Uniqlo. Is that, you know
clothing,
that?
Oh, it's so, yeah.
Japanese clothes. Oh.
Eileen knows it. Yeah, it's awesome. I love Uniqlo. Ooh.
They were number two. YouTube, separate from Google, YouTube has high brand recognition. How can you not satisfy if you're YouTube? What would you do wrong? Disney, McDonald's, Panasonic, Nissan, Dyson, and Rakuten. So is Uniqlo a Japanese company or is it a...
Good question. I'm not sure. I discovered it in New York, but I think it might be.
Because if it isn't, then the top Japanese company is number 7 on this list.
Mm. I'll do a search.
Wow.
I wish I could find out.
Go ahead.
I did try to find out exactly what the survey entailed. Every time you see a lot of these surveys, some from analysts, some from just independents, and how are they saying most favorite brand? Are they going by sales? Are they going by satisfaction? Some of them go by they do what they call a cumulative influence index, where they try to figure out how much does a consumer interaction with this product lead to a second or third or fourth interaction.
Right.
So nice number, nice thing for to talk about over coffee one day. I'm not sure how significant it is.
What does it mean? Yeah. Well, here's another number. Tim Cook actually getting higher ratings from Apple employees as CEO than Steve Jobs did.
I'm not actually
that
surprised.
Doesn't bite heads off.
Yeah, actually, you're right. In fact, what's amazing is that Steve Jobs had 95% approval rating. Because of the stories. Some of the stories Alex has told.
I haven't told any stories.
Others have told. You're right. You don't even now, after Steve's gone, you don't want to tell stories.
I don't tell any stories.
Wow. That is a long arm.
I don't know anything.
I know nothing.
In fact, I'm not even sure if I've ever been to the Apple campus.
I know nothing. That's prudent.
Is it in Mountain View?
That's prudent. It's in Mountain View. It's right next to Hasbro. It's prudent, I think, to say that. Because you see what happens to people who aren't, don't toe the line. They don't get invitations to Apple events. Tim Cook, number one. Jim Turley of Ernst & Young, number two. Tim Cook has 97% approval from March 2011 to March 2012. That's amazing. American Express and Google. Larry Page at Google. Just a hair underneath. But again, those are, as Andy quite rightly points out, just numbers.
I think that the thing is that I definitely think that Tim Cook's going to be a great as far as taking care of the employees.
I agree.
Care of the
brand. I could see why the employees would love him.
I think that the real question that we're not going to know for the next 3 to 5 years is will Apple continue to innovate at the speed that it's been innovating? Right. Steve was not necessarily the soft, warm, we're going to take care of everybody kind of guy, but he was able to push that innovation in a very, very specific and very laser pointed sort of way. And I do get concerned that when I see the new interface for the Apple TV, I get concerned that Steve is gone now.
So we didn't talk about that last week, but horrible. I didn't bring it up.
It's horrible.
But the guy who said, the guy tweeted, "Oh God, that was something Steve Jobs rejected 5 years ago." We're talking about the tiled interface on the new Apple TV. He hated that 5 years ago, and then he recanted a little bit. He said, "I'm not at Apple. I've been at Apple in years." But I should point out that was Steve 5 years ago, and it may very well be that now that we have everybody's used to the tiled interface of the iPhone and the iPad, that this would be. But I agree with you. I hate it.
I'd much rather go back.
The other thing you hear a lot of stories about how it wasn't always, Steve gives you a yes or no, and that the yes
he hated everything.
Firm yes. No, it's just that sometimes because he didn't get it at that time, or because they didn't really make the right case for it. Oftentimes, it's not that you could talk Steve into it, but more like if you make your case better with successive work on it, you can make it work. So that's the fact that they've gone to a tiled interface, I don't think means that anybody's turning their backs on Steve. And if they, Steve's not here anymore. Time for stuff.
Well, do you like the new interface?
I actually do. I think it's more appropriate for the sort of device that the Apple TV is. Your entertainment is coming from so many different sources now that it kind of defies organization in sort of a drop-down menu where here is everything that you have that's related to the internet. Here's everything you have that's related to music. I think that the only way to really cut through that at this point is to simply say, fine, here's one tile that simply has local music. Here's another tile that has stuff that's coming from Netflix. Here's another tile that represents your Flickr stream, another tile that represents YouTube. If there's a better way of doing that, especially a better way you can do that with a 5-button interface, or better yet, a better way to get there with a voice interface where you don't want to be saying menu, internet, Flickr. Wouldn't you rather just simply look at a list and say, oh, Flickr, give me Flickr? I think it's fine.
Well, Adam, you said it's hard to compare?
Well, yeah, the problem is that it's easy when, Lion comes out, we all have Snow Leopard Macs around to compare to. Right. So you could actually go back and forth and say, this is better, this is worse for these reasons. The Apple TV, I'm sure there are people who have multiple ones out there. I am not one of them. And so all of a sudden it changes. And
well, the old one also upgraded. So it's hard to tell because if you upgraded.
Yeah, precisely.
They're all the same now.
That's exactly what I got. My old one upgraded.
Why do you? Well, go ahead.
My feeling is though that it's actually not more clicks. That if you're just like going into Netflix every night, which is sort of mostly what we do, Netflix is selected. You go in, it's one click to get in there, one click to get to, one or two clicks to get to recently watched. Boom, you're in. So I sort of don't quite like it, but I can't say that it's a less efficient interface, which is the main thing that I would worry about.
I think if I could rearrange the tiles, I think I'd probably be less sensitive to it. I just always feel like, oh, that, because I don't use anything on the first.
Seems like there's a lot of clicking.
I don't use anything on that top line. So I don't. So like I don't go to any of those, and so I'm like,
and it could be as confusing as the iPhone.
Well, it is kind of confusing. That's the other thing. It's kind of confusing because you might see what you want on that top row. But then if you click it, it doesn't go to it. It goes to – it's difficult for me. I am not a fan of it, and I'm using it a lot because I wanted to really kind of try it. I replaced my Roku with it just so I could really have an experience of it. And
the main thing that I don't like is the way it focuses all of the top row with the the posters for the different movies, right, with only the iTunes stuff. That, yeah, I don't use iTunes. I use Netflix, I liked before when I could see the Netflix pictures up there.
Right.
Although I think that what it does do is that because I use Netflix a lot, when I come up to it and I see movies that are available, I'm like, oh, those are available. And of course, I think that they're Netflix.
Like
I go to
good
Netflix
stuff.
And I'm like,
yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, wow, there's a current movie.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I think that they're already in my queue. Because oftentimes
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spies on Netflix? Thank God.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
$6
later.
I like the way that Roku does it. I do like the fact that the top level, you have a carousel of here are the apps that are available to you on this. Right. One of them is going to be Roku. One of them is going to be Netflix. One of them is going to be Amazon Instant Video. One of them is going to be stuff on the Twit Network. I don't think there's a perfect solution to this. I actually now have about 3 or 4 different TV boxes connected to the TV outside my office, because I'm trying to get excited enough about Boxy and Google TV to write something about them. I've had them hooked up for months now, and I just can't say anything that says, why would you actually want this?
I'll tell you why. You want me to
Boxy,
know?
Boxy works nice, but it's just too much of a computer hooked up to the TV set. It's not designed like an appliance the way that the Apple TV or the Roku box should. So it's a really, really sensitive topic, and I don't think anybody's really knocked it yet.
I love Google TV.
I've got an interesting situation. We have a new Panasonic Viera Plasma. And so it's a smart TV with it can do Netflix and Amazon Instant Video and all that. Well, what's interesting is
it's a great
TV,
but I just don't like the way the TV manufacturers are implementing apps.
Well,
I hear that they've implemented them. I just don't see them.
The apps are a little bit more confusing to use. The interfaces aren't as good.
Yeah.
And most notably, like when you go into Netflix on the TV, it doesn't cache very well. So you have to wait for it to load your queue,
all
that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But the Apple TV, since the upgrade, will just freeze or stop working, and say, can't contact Netflix. Whereas, if we're having kind of network problems, whereas the Viera app, it will go black or the picture will freeze for a second or two, audio will continue, and then it will pick up. It's much more robust, which is really frustrating. Since the upgrade for the Apple TV, it's just gone downhill that way.
I'm wondering whether that's a buffer issue, where it's not in order to jump.
The network is having trouble.
Trouble is not as big of a deal as the buffer, because if that long wait that you're waiting for that video to come up, is it caching a big chunk of that video into RAM or hard drive or whatever, some kind of state?
I don't think so, because the Apple TV will just do its little spinner, but whereas the Viera will either just freeze for a second or two and then come back, or if it really has trouble, it'll say go black entirely and say rebuffering, and it almost never does the go black and say rebuffering compared to the Apple TV.
Because you're waiting longer at the beginning. What it's doing is it's creating a larger buffer at the very beginning, so it's creating.
Don't think so.
Okay.
Because the Viera is slower to load the queues in Netflix, but it's no slower to start once you actually press play.
Okay.
It's interesting because.
Well,
we reviewed the Samsung smart apps, but everybody I've talked to who has the new smart TVs, and it's because you're comparing it to Apple, and these guys are new at this, and they just there's all sorts. You don't want your TV to hang. You don't want to be watching a show. Right. You don't want to be this, and this happened to me constantly. Watching a show and says, "Oh, you got to re-log into Facebook." No, I don't really want to. I want to watch Game of Thrones. Can we defer this? And it's covering the screen.
Yeah.
It's like, no!
That was the problem I had with the Boxy Box. They you can get the HBO Go app for it, but it actually runs through a web browser, and there are intermediates. As you said, you just want to see the Ricky Gervais show. You just want to pick up a remote and start watching TV. You do, things that you would have absolutely no problem with if you're in front of a laptop or in front of your desktop are just not acceptable with a TV.
That's actually what, one of the main reasons I like the Google TV. I have the Logitech review. Once they updated the OS, which they really needed to do, it's been great. And one of the reasons is, you know, admittedly, not everybody wants a keyboard as a remote control, but you have it's more that laptop experience. There's a button that says go back to live TV. You press it, that's it. There's a home button that goes right to the menus. It's the navigation is so much easier because now you have it. Basically, you have it.
Well, and do you use your iPhone or iPad with your Apple TV?
I do, and one of the things I do love AirPlay.
Yeah,
I think AirPlay.
Well, but I'm talking about as a controller.
No, I don't.
Because that's
I should probably
I
do that.
That's all I
oh,
use.
See, that's maybe the problem is that the Apple remote is so constrained.
You got to give that up. You got to give that up. That's okay. That's only there if someone doesn't have an iPhone. I mean, if you have an iPhone, you get the remote for the iPhone, and it's just like then when you have to type in your passwords and stuff, you type it on
so
your
much
iPhone.
Easier. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You don't type anything much with the Apple remote.
What?
But that said, the Panasonic has a really, really one of those big honking remotes with 75 keys on it, and that makes it almost impossible to use. I actually far prefer the 5-button Apple remote.
Right. I think
I think you really did hit on it though. The fact that when you use AirPlay from an iPad or from an iPhone, and when you get to use it from your laptop with 10.8, I really think that that's the answer to having an internet connected TV set, because every place where I'm discovering new entertainment, it's always on a mobile device or on my laptop. This actually started to hit me when I was testing out the new version of the Apple TV. As a matter of fact, because I was spending lots and lots of time in the living room writing my reviews and just like playing with stuff on there, and just like in the 10 minutes of downtime where I'm on Twitter and someone recommends a video link, I'm on the new iPad with that. Is there, oh wait a minute, I don't have to watch it on the iPad screen. I can now tap this one button and I can actually now watch it in full 1080 in full 1080 on this huge TV set or across my sofa. And that's when it hit me that this is exactly how I want this sort of a setup to work. I want to use the Netflix app on my iPad. I want to use links I'm getting from Twitter and from Flipboard. And then I want to tap one button and then simply say, you know what? I don't want to look at this in a poster stamp. I want to actually sit back, put the device back somewhere, and now actually watch it. That's the device that I'd pay for.
This is where Apple really has, of course, a huge advantage, is that ecosystem control.
And with the remote, the other thing, by the way, is that you don't need infrared, so you don't have to point at it. You know, so the thing is, the remote, I can control my TV in my back house, from my remote.
The iPhone does work with
it. Eyes free.
I have the Fios app for the iPhone too, and it sickens me every single time that changing channels on the iPhone, where it has to communicate with a Wi-Fi base station downstairs, then back upstairs, then back to the cable box, is faster and more interactive than actually holding up a remote and pointing and clicking my button way.
That's a very good point. Wi-Fi is the right way to go on that. We're going to take a break. We are having fun, and we have more Mac news. Well, I shouldn't say Mac news. Well, we might have some Mac news. I'm waiting for Mac news. Any minute now, there'll be Mac news.
Someone needs to create
some Mac news.
There's one story.
On Mac Break Weekly.
Wait, I put a hardware section in there.
You know what blows me away?
When
you started Mac Break, when was that? 2008? 2007?
2007, I think.
So 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you went out and you spent, $100,000 on a 1080p camera.
Everyone made fun of me.
From Lucas.
We did pay that off, by the way.
Well, good. I'm glad you paid it off.
But, I mean, it paid off and worked.
So he could shoot 1080p video. We put out this podcast. Everybody thought we were nuts. You were nuts, not me. Putting out a podcast in 1080p. Nobody could watch it. Nobody could download it. It was just like nuts. And now, you know, I was thinking yesterday while I was doing the iPhone repair, I was using my Galaxy Note to shoot 1080p video. Well, it's not exactly the same as that Cine Alta, but it's 1080p video, high def video, and uploading it while they're doing it to the cloud so that everybody can watch it on my Twitter feed.
Yeah,
we've come a long way in five years.
In 5 years, yeah.
It's like, now admittedly, the 1080p you were putting out was like true high def. But I mean,
it's
pretty good.
It's really hard to.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
In 5 years, and that's
You're
why
saying I should have shaved.
Yes. Well, that's why I'm not spending a lot of money on cameras, because
we've actually stopped after that purchase. We stopped really spending a lot on cameras. We buy a lot of cameras, but we don't spend. If we're going to do more than $10,000, we typically rent.
Yeah.
Because I don't need them. I don't need those kinds of cameras very often.
Yeah.
So,
We will come back with more in just a bit. A great panel from Tidbits, Adam Engst, Alex Lindsay of Pixel Corps from the Chicago Sun-Times, Andy Anacco. Let's talk about Pond 5. There are a lot of stock content. I don't even want to say stock photos anymore. Stock content, stock media marketplaces out there. This is the one you should be looking at. And you may not have heard of it. I hadn't until they came to us. This is really amazing. First of all, very affordable. It's great for creators. I think that's one of the reasons I like it. Creators can use Pond 5 and set their own price, which is not, you know, normally the case. But it has not just video, but not just pictures, but video. See this beautiful video that's showing right now? They have a free one every day, by the way, so you should always check Pond 5 to get your free stock video.
Because you need that week. Squirrel. I'm going to use that squirrel.
That's a good squirrel. Andy's got a few of those. Andy, you could probably sell your squirrel videos on Pond 5, come to think of it.
All right.
This is the free clip of the week.
I want those peanuts to be tax deductible now.
This is, yeah, exactly. And this is HD 720. Look at that, kind of an airport. This would be useful. But that's the point, is that there are so many choices here. Video, photos, illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, After Effects projects. In fact, go to the front page and you'll see a million video clips, 5,000 plus new ones this week alone. 7.6.
How do they curate them? Do they?
I don't know.
Are they going through all of that, or are they?
Is that where you got the lion the other time?
I was gonna say I got all my lion sound effects, the awesome ones from last week.
That's good.
There's so many to choose from, and then there's also video. So I could do a slate. I can create a slate for your, you know, Andy's lion tip.
212,000 audio clips, and there's new all the time. So this is Pond 5. I just want you to kind of know about it. And by the way, we have a 25% off deal if you use offer code TWIT25 at pond5.com.
So that's a hummingbird in front of green screen.
Yeah. See these. I mean, look at that. That's beautiful. Rain on glass. I mean, that's gorgeous. So use them in your PowerPoint or keynote presentations. Use them in your podcasts. Very affordable. Prices start at $5 for stock video and music, $2 for sound effects. It's what they call royalty free. Once you pay, you just use it.
Well, and it's so important. Once you start doing this for business, and we get a lot of stock photography, is that, you know, you have to pay attention to the rights. You know, make sure that you're not just pulling something down off the internet. And so finding some royalty free means you're not paying for it every time you use it. You're not paying for it every time it goes out. And you have that video you can put into your video or your presentation, and you're not worried about it. You are totally taken care of from a legal perspective.
Great UI, too. You just hover over the thumbnail, and it'll actually play the video for you so you can see what you're going to get. This is 1080p time-lapse of clouds, shadow passing a village in the Georgian mountains. $5. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This was $29. So the prices are set by the creator, which is great. There's a cable way. I guess somebody in the Georgian mountains is doing a lot of video.
Prices are really good.
They're very affordable. It's a really neat thing. And you could take 25% off your first order. They don't even say that, just this month, by using the offer code TWIT25 when you check out. Audio of a ticking bomb or a music background for your next viral video, images of palm trees, penguins, and pandas. Nowadays, you just have to breathe on a video and it'll get pulled from YouTube.
Lion feasting?
Lions feasting.
Yummy.
That's why you got to go to Pond 5 and get royalty-free, high-quality content so that you don't get your video pulled down. 25% off your purchase this month when you use the offer code TWIT25. And we thank Pond5 so much for their support on Mac Break. And Mac, because I know a lot of you are content creators, you should check it out as a content creator. It's a great deal too. Pond5.com. Half of American households own at least one Apple product, according to a CNBC survey.
Holy penetration, Batman.
Okay, I gave it. I said that just so that you could say that. We're moving on. That was very nicely done, I must say. Well played, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, why does Google want my password? I've been sitting on this Google document all day, and now all of a sudden it says, are you
it's
Leo?
It's actually the flashback virus.
Oh, I hope not. Now you scared me. All right. Signing in. Thank you. Let's move on to a very good stock market price for Apple. Analysts are now saying that Apple may get to $1,000 a share and a market cap of $1 trillion.
Someone's got to do that in a Dr. Evil
let's
voice.
Say that you can have one share of Apple stock or a MacBook Air.
God. God. Yeah, right now it's a well-equipped iPad. Apple's, of course, financial results will come out April 24th, a Tuesday, right after MacBreak Weekly. As always.
Thanks.
No, they do it on purpose. I know. You know, this is why you don't want to say bet. They'll just, it'll screw with you every way they can.
We're even just going to move things. Everything to right after.
You know,
after
our analyst there. Call really should be right after MacBreak Weekly. Yeah. Why would they do that?
It's the same reason they release software updates on Monday afternoons, just to mess with us.
Just to mess with you.
It's clearly why.
It's clearly it's because they said, us. How can we screw tidbits?
Yes.
They will do live streaming of the call, which is fun. Maybe we'll break in. What are we doing on that? We'll break into TwitPhoto at 2 o'clock and say, I'm sorry, we're going to have to suspend TwitPhoto while we listen to Tim Cook. You know it's going to be a good quarter.
It's going to be a good quarter.
You know it's going to be. It's their first iPad 3 quarter, right?
We installed yet another press to print more money.
Yeah.
Yes. And it is fully operational.
Their last quarter was their best quarter ever, $13 billion in profits.
Sales. There's going to be an architectural update on the money pits underneath the new headquarters.
Does anybody want to predict? I mean, it's 3 weeks off, but anybody want to predict iPad sales for that first quarter? We were wrong on iPad sales for the first week. We admit it now.
I thought it was the first. I thought it was the year. Or something. What?
No. We were doing the first weekend of iPad sales.
And what did we say?
I think you said 15 million.
No, I wasn't saying 15 million for the first week. It was like,
oh yeah, sure. You know, now we rewind. We were saying very clear. Weren't we, Andy? Very clear. So. First weekend of sales.
I didn't say.
I thought it was first.
You thought it was what?
You thought it was the first week.
I thought it was first full week.
Yeah. Oh, I could be wrong.
So what? Even Andy, who was the most conservative, still probably overestimated. But what do you think for the first quarter? So they'll have had not very long.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it. It's probably going to be pretty damn good.
Yeah, good. I think we have a winner.
12 million.
How many? 12.
12 million.
They did 15 in last quarter, and that was record. 15 yeah, in a that, quarter. I would
that
say
was full quarter.
That was
oh,
a
we're
full
not
quarter.
Talking just iPad
we're
3.
Talking. Do you think they sold many iPad 2s last in the last quarter? Maybe they did.
Well, they're still selling the cheap one.
Yeah.
The cheap one. I'd be interested to see if they break out the iPad 2 and say how many of them are buying the most expensive
won't.
One. I don't think
they're
going to, but
I
think that would be really interesting because I'm kind of curious who that opened up.
There is, and it baffles me every time I hear it. A often heard, oh, the iPad 3 is just kind of marginally better.
It is from the iPad 2?
Yeah.
It is just marginally
better. It's $100 better.
Yeah, it's marginally
I think
more
that
expensive.
Screen makes it much more than marginally better.
I think the fact that you can get 40 megabits per second on the LTE model,
and the fact that
you can get a display quality that is as good or better than your desktop.
Yes,
that's not a marginal
and
upgrade.
A decent and an actually very usable camera. All of that means it's more than a marginal, but anyway, apparently there's enough people who believe that they might say, oh well, I'll get the iPad 2 for $100 less.
Yeah, I will say for $100 less, it's marginally better, but it's also only marginally more expensive.
You think
for $100
not...
more, absolutely get the iPad 3.
I mean, okay, that's what
so
I think.
I'm just saying, I mean, it's not, you're nuts.
But there are certainly a lot of people who are purely budget constrained. You know, I mean,
right. Sure.
I don't necessarily defend it, but there are other people who say, okay, if it's $100 cheaper, I'll get the $100 cheap one because that's what I can afford.
There are other departments who can say, I'm going to get two free iPads. If I get the iPad 2 with the amount of money that I have to spend to equip my department or my class for iPads.
Yeah.
So. No.
Yeah. I definitely think that if I'm buying a huge number of them, I think that the $399 makes a big difference because it does add up pretty quickly. And especially we use them. We use iPads a lot when we have producers that are all working on the same project at the same time on a live stream.
We use them as coasters.
We need Skype. We need like just to be able to sit there and chat back and forth with people all over the world at the same time. And I don't need it to be. 1080p to do that,
and I'm seeing a big shift in fleet use of iPads.
Yeah,
and it's more and more companies I'm hearing from and talking to who are just saying, we're just going to give every single one of our associates and our field people an iPad and said, do whatever you want to do with it. This is going to save us more than $500 a year just in not having to send you paper documents and send you binders of training materials. I just keep seeing it over and over. Even if you just go to like a Home Depot, you will see more people who are like the company reps who are just there to like check on stock and make sure that the end caps are fully populated. They're getting all their stuff on an iPad now.
I was walking through Macy's and the makeup counter had an iPad to demonstrate looks. You know, I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Infinite number of them used in business in a variety of ways.
I'm sure a business,
you know, the Lancome counter sees a $500 iPad as a tiny amount for a display like that. That's nothing.
Well, and to have an interactive display, people used to pay a lot for those kiosks. I used to do development for that, and it was like...
It's a kiosk, isn't it?
And with iBook Author and so on and so forth, it's a really easy to develop kiosk. Right. You know, I think that's the other piece of that. And I still think that's going to end up being a Trojan horse into corporate, not into education. I mean, education will do fine, but I think corporate training and corporate communication, I think, is going to be a big seller for being... Anybody can create that kind of content for their company.
So Foxconn decided to cut down the amount of overtime for its employees in China from, it was like 60 hours a month to 39 hours a month. And as one might predict, to be in compliance with Chinese law as well as Apple's requests, and as one might predict, the employees hit the roof. They said, we want the money. Right. What are you taking our hours away for? They said, no, we'll still give you the same amount. No, we're here to work. We are not here to play. We're sending money back home. We want to work long hours, just underscoring how difficult it is to really make from here an assessment of what the labor practices ought to be in China. However, the Fair Labor Association did today publish the findings of its investigation at Apple Foxconn. And they did audits of three Foxconn facilities. FLA's investigation found that within the last 12 months, all three factories exceeded both the FLA code standard of 60 hours per week, regular plus overtime, and the Chinese legal limits of 40 hours per week and 36 maximum a month. Foxconn was making them work more overtime than was allowed even in China. During peak production periods, the average number of hours worked per week exceeded 60 hours per worker.
60 hours per worker for...
Per week. During, like, when they're ramping up for the iPhone 4S or whatever. There were periods in which some employees worked more than 7 days in a row without the required 24 hours off.
Sounds
like Microsoft.
Sounds like Twit.
Sounds like me. I don't know. I'm not sure if there's been a week that I haven't worked 60 or 70 hours for
But I understand you don't want to require an employee. I think it's nice to make it available. You don't want to require an employee. You cannot have.
Well, evidently they're not requiring it because the employees are all upset that they're taking.
Well,
not.
And again, we don't know if all the employees are upset or just some vocal ones or ones that were pushed forward by Foxconn. But
so I have an interesting thing that I just ran across today, which is that some students at Cornell are having a protest as we speak, in theory streaking across campus protest the fact that Cornell is associated with the Fair Labor Association for Cornell branded apparel. And apparently the Fair Labor Association has a number of policies that Cornell is actually considers problematic. And so the students are protesting to push Cornell into actually disassociating themselves with the FLA entirely.
The FLA is by some seen as a shill.
Yeah,
that's
that was the hint. There was some independent group workers. I can't remember. I have to look at WCR, some group that was entirely independent of big corporations that the students were saying, you know, this is who you should be getting to be auditing your workers.
Right. Foxconn has committed to reduce working hours to legal limits, which would be 40 hours a week and 36 maximum overtime per month, while protecting pay, improving health and safety conditions, establishing a genuine voice for workers, and will monitor on an ongoing basis to verify compliance. Maximum of a 49-hour work week, including overtime. A decrease in monthly overtime from 80 hours to 36 hours.
You know, I think one of the things that's really interesting...
And they promise they've agreed to develop a compensation package that protects workers from losing income due to reduced overtime. In effect, they're saying, no, we're going to figure it out so that you make as much money even though you're working less.
That's good. I mean, one of the things I think is really interesting about this is that in the information, our new information world, our information society,
is how much of all of these actions are being created through because it's a PR issue. There's not this isn't a regulate.
Totally.
You know, there's not regulatory. There's not. It's because it. People, you know, companies
apparently the Chinese government's not enforcing its own laws.
Well, no, it's interesting of how important as we continue to move into this information age, it becomes to manage your public relations, and how much more important that it becomes than even regulations. I mean, it's important to manage all of the stuff, you know, from a PR perspective.
Well, and
I also think that Apple actually cares about this issue. I mean, even before the kerfuffle started up, they had a consistently no electronics manufacturer has what we would call a fantastic record with labor, because there's always a way you can make things better. Right. But Apple always did more than they were required to, even just for PR purposes.
I think it's hard for us to know. I think the Mike Daisy affair demonstrates
what's
hard for us to know what's going on. How much of this is puffery? How much of this is honest and real? And but I agree with you, Andy. And my gut tells me that Apple does care about this. We don't know, but my gut says you're right.
My gut is that Tim Cook cares about it a lot more than Steve Jobs did.
Yeah, and Tim is a Tim is a supply guy. Yeah. He's a production guy, and of course, it was probably Tim that moved so much of this offshore because it's so much less expensive to make. So, but I have a feeling he's an honorable guy, and I would hope that he is going to make sure that the Foxconn employees get treated well. And I'll tell you what, Apple's more forefront than anybody else on this. HP, Dell,
No one's saying anything. I mean,
Toshiba, hello? I mean, is anybody...
I mean, we have to remember that everybody is getting stuff from Foxconn. So if they're not talking about it or not doing it, it's all the same for their employees, too.
Yeah. Foxconn recruiter, according to a Japanese broadcaster, says we're hiring... I'm going to cry. For the June release of the iPhone 5...
It's going to be the iPhone 4SX.
In a conversation recorded by TV Tokyo and aired April 2nd, a Foxconn recruiter says the company needs to hire about 18,000 people for iPhone 5 manufacturer. The recruiter said, quote, because it seems it will go on sale in June.
But is he guessing? Is he just trying to stock
up? He did say seems.
Oh, it's every time I see a quote like that, though, it really makes me think that it reminds me that the people who really know what they're talking about also know enough not to talk about it. I don't think that they would ever be within 8 miles of a camera and saying, oh, yes, well, we're planning to start. Right. I know the iPhone 5 is going to be shipping in June. Yeah, you know what?
Sure.
That's a really bad way. That is what is known as a career limiting action.
Well, having just spent money on getting an iPhone, both of us, I would hope that the iPhone 5 doesn't come out till later. Everybody asked me, they said, well, why don't you just wait till June? Because I hear the new iPhone. And I thought, well, what if it doesn't?
Well, but okay, but this is interesting. I promise you, I don't mean this as sort of a snarky comment. Wouldn't it have been interesting for you to say, I'm going to wait until the iPhone 5 comes out, whatever they're going to call it, in June. I'm going to make my Galaxy Note my daily drive.
It is.
I'm going to switch completely. Why did you have to switch up to a new phone today? Did you just need it just for
studio
stuff?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I use the Note entirely. In fact, I'm feeling a little weird because I left the Note at home today. I love the Note. Oh, the Note is it for me.
You can't come on the field trip.
You think I would have dunked my primary phone into a glass of water? I'm not that stupid. No.
Honestly, that's cool. That's you should use that every time you want. Every time someone asks you about like why you prefer like Android over iPhone, there is no greater demonstration that said that when you had to potentially sacrifice a device, you decided to sacrifice the iPhone and not the Note.
Yeah. No, and also because the liquid pillow, I had to send this to them for several days. I'm not going to send my primary phone. So the Note is my phone. Oh God, I love the Note. Oh, I love it. But there, you know where the iPhone still gets me. There are a couple of apps that they're not available on Android that I really want to use.
I'm in exactly that same boat because I've been off and on. I have had access to certain Windows Phone devices. Since Mango came out in the fall, and man, I get so close to saying this is just Windows Phone is just the way that I want to use a phone. I just wish that it had certain really critical apps that I love.
Yeah, that's the real downside on that one. Is it's perfect in every respect except It's missing all the functionality.
If these two phones were made out of Lego, like my, the Windows Phone and the iPhone, I would be probably taking 60% of the parts, software and hardware, out of the iPhone, and 40% of what makes the Windows Phone tick. Oh. And when I wake it up, it would look like Windows Phone. It wouldn't look like an iPhone.
Looks like I picked a bad day to leave the note behind. Instagram from Android came out today.
That's correct.
That's one of like the very few apps. Now the app that is only on the iPhone is the Renew app for my Renew alarm clock that watches me sleep.
It watches you sleep?
It watches me
is that
sleep.
Creepy?
Yeah.
It's a stalker app.
It's a stalker app. And the pair app, you know, the couples app, the pair app, that's like path for two people only. And those are the only two things. Everything else.
I've had Instapaper on my Windows phone for quite some time now. It's actually one of the first iPods I was able to download for the Windows phone. I don't know what the problem was in getting the Evernote running on the Android platform. I wouldn't worry that says something about how difficult it is to deploy an important app.
Not only do I have Evernote on Android, but I have an Evernote widget and I love widgets on Android, that lets me to do instantly record and transcribe a note and automatically sync it to all my devices, including my iPhone, that lets me instantly take a picture and have it just in one button click go to my Evernote database. Now, Evernote is actually best on Android, I might add.
Okay.
But you're right, I don't have Instapaper.
There's an Instapaper client available for
you. Yeah. You know, I have it sent, everything sent to my Kindle. And once a week, I read it on my Kindle.
It seems like there are like five or six apps that are kind of like the equalizers of the platform wars. Because as soon as you buy a new phone, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's an Android, whether it's a Windows phone, so long as you download the Kindle app, so long as you download an app that gives you access to Dropbox and fill up the slots with two or three others that are pretty much universal apps at this point, it's not as though that's the complete equalizer, but that means that it turns almost every phone into at least an option for almost every typical user.
You can get here's the truth. You can get to 90% of the functionality on any probably even on BlackBerry and Symbian. You can get to 90%. It's that last 10% that kills you. And if that last 10% is like something you really miss and love, like Instagram would be a good example, then that's a deal breaker.
It's like NASA used to say, you don't get credit for getting the astronauts 90% of the way home from the moon.
You got to get them all the way, baby. Let's take a break. Problem. And when we come back, we do have a Mac story. it's a rumor.
I tried.
It's a rumor. That's the best I can do for you today. But first, let's talk a little bit about Carbonite, which is backup done right. I hope you're backing up. I hope you're using Time Machine. Time Machine's fantastic. But there's a next step in disaster prevention, which means getting it off site. So Time Machine does two of the three things that I really think you want. It's automatic, so you don't have to think about it. It's continual. So when you change a document, Time Machine automatically backs it up. It fails on that one thing, which is that the backup is in the same place as your originals. And that means if there's something really bad happens, a fire or somebody breaks in and steals everything, you're going to lose everything. So you, by all means, use a local backup, but add to it this off-site backup that's done by Carbonite. Whenever you're online, it automatically backs up your files to the internet. It's cloud storage. They're always available. You can look at them anywhere, anytime. Just log on to your Carbonite account. Mac, PC, smartphone, iPad. They have free apps everywhere. You'll log in, then there's your stuff. You can get your stuff. And if the worst happens, restore is very easy. You just go to the new computer, for instance, log into your Carbonite account, and restore all your data. All of this starts at less than $5 a month. That's for everything on your internal drive. It's also the most affordable out there. It's not for 5 gigs or 25 gigs. It's for everything on your internal drive. And you can try it free for 2 weeks right now. If you use the offer code MacBreak, you don't need a credit card. Just go to Carbonite.com. You'll see at the site they do have other plans. They have plans for external drives. They have plans for business. So, you know, pick the plan that's right for you, then use the offer code MacBreak. Try it free for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy 14 months for the price of 12, two free months, when you use the offer code MacBreak. Another nice feature, and this is something that iCloud does not offer, Carbonite has built-in strong encryption, and you have the key. Carbonite cannot see it. So if your privacy is important to you, that's another way it beats Dropbox, iCloud, and other cloud storage. You control the key. I was talking to David Friend, the CEO of Carbonite, and he said, we frequently get subpoenas, you know, for people's data on the cloud, and we just say,
You're going to have to talk to them.
You're going to have to talk to them. We don't have the key.
Right.
We cannot look at it. We cannot show it to you. So if privacy is important, Carbonite's a great choice too. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK. So the rumor... But I think this is I think it's so credible. I would say it's beyond a leak, beyond a rumor. It's certainly going to happen. Ivy Bridge is Intel's new chipset. Has some nice features, and Intel themselves say we're going to start shipping Ivy Bridge next month. So it seems I wouldn't say it at all unlikely that Ivy Bridge will show up on a Mac sometime next month.
And all I got to say is if this turns out to be true and they actually release like a Mac Pro, let's just say that they might release a Mac Pro, that the sales for Macs will be outstanding in the next quarter, just because there's so many of us that are waiting for one more update. You know, one Thunderbolt-empowered, Mac Pro. And I know that there's a lot of people that are waiting, hoping that they're going to get a new one.
Love that. CPU World posted a leak saying April 29. Several higher-end Ivy Bridge quad-core processors of both desktop and mobile flavors. A couple of the core i5 and i7 desktop processors. Two of the mobile processors, the 3720 and the 3820. A number of low-end configurations. You do get good power on Ivy Bridge. You get a lot of, very economical power usage on these. Be nice. Low power dual core Ivy Bridge processor, 17-watt. That actually would work in the Air, 17-watt. That would be maybe a new Air. Those will come out early June though, so don't wait for an Air. I would bet they'll hold off until the part they want is available. Okay. You're not going to rev them all at once. But a 22 nanometer MacBook Air maybe in June.
And someone on the IRC said that I think I'm the only Thunderbolt fan. I got to say, we're using Thunderbolt more and more for drives.
You're who Thunderbolt was made for.
Oh my goodness!
But you can, because you have lots of money. You're willing to pay. No. You're willing to pay
it's production.
High end for high end speed. But it is very expensive, very low capacity.
I'll bring it in. But one of the things that Seagate has is this Thunderbolt adapter. So they have this whole thing where everything's modular. They're right. Little drives and big drives. So I got the Thunderbolt adapter for the USB drive. So you pop the USB part off the bottom and you stick it in the Thunderbolt. And
makes it fast.
120 megs a second to that drive. And that's not a flash drive. That's a regular spinning 7200 RPM drive. But the drive is able to just go a lot faster. The drive is capable of a lot more than FireWire 800. That's a lot of these drives are, and being able to tie that in and be able to back stuff up quickly is really really makes a difference. Of course, because a lot of times what we're doing is we're also taking Seagate. They made one for their drives. We haven't bought any of the Seagate drives themselves for this, but we use the Thunderbolt piece, and you can take your SSD drive and just slide it on the raw SSD drive and slide it on, and then you have a Thunderbolt interface and pull stuff off quickly, and it's cool. You got the Elgato.
I have for review. I think it's the Elgato. It's 120 gig SSD, so it's very fast. Yeah, I think it's that. But look at this, 120 gigs for $420. So yeah, it's fast. But even for you, you got to buy bigger capacities than that. It was 120 gigs worth.
No. We buy
3 minutes of video for you.
No, I have a 512.
Yeah,
and I got a whole bunch of 256s. Because we use them for our recorders. Use them. Our little sound devices.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just wondering when this is going to make the mainstream.
Never. I think
never.
I don't know.
As in never.
Thunderbolt or SSD?
SSD is obviously mainstream.
Oh, well,
Thunderbolt.
Well, see, that's kind of odd, too.
Well, there's no reason to put Thunderbolt on a regular drive. But it's not. I mean, you have FireWire 800, you have USB 3. There's plenty of throughput for regular spinning drives.
Right. Yeah,
isn't there?
Well, the performance is higher with the Thunderbolt, because the FireWire 800 is not saturating the drive's ability to write and read.
So the drives are faster
faster than the Thunderbolt.
All right.
Than
would be an argument then.
Yeah. And,
USB 3, same?
Well, we're Mac users, so really you're talking
about
USB 2, which is crud.
Yeah. Well, but see, this is kind of my issue, is that Apple decided to go Thunderbolt instead of USB 3.
Yeah, the great thing about US Thunderbolt is that it's also your monitor connection. It's also, you can pass a lot of other things to it.
I understand all the great things.
From a professional perspective, it has revolutionized what we're doing.
Yeah, because it's very expensive.
So, for instance, there's...
Will it get cheap?
I don't know if it's going to get cheap. I just know that it is a production solution,
I understand that, and I'm not gainsaying that. I just think that doesn't...
Does the average consumer need it? Maybe not. But the main thing, they can use Wi-Fi. I mean, for that. I'm not kidding. I mean, for
no,
most
that's
people...
that's true. I use Wi-Fi.
I mean, most people can use Wi-Fi. They don't need to connect anything to their computers. That's fast enough for what most people are doing. But when you really need a fast connection, it has been this horrible situation for production folks where we have to have cards. I mean, what Thunderbolt really does is it does mark the ending of needing a tower, because a lot of what we were doing from a production perspective is we need towers for fast throughput. We need to have cards, specialized cards in the back that we don't need anymore. Like we used to carry all these huge towers to productions, and now we can take a laptop and hook it to a little, AJA IOXT or whatever, and get dual, video outs from a little Thunderbolt connection. And that's, for us, that's pretty revolutionary.
I hope Thunderbolt succeeds. It's been a while. It's been, 2 years?
Well, there's more and more coming out. I mean, we have more and more devices that we have. I mean, now that Seagate has, connections for us to actually use, a lot of the production equipment is now starting, AJA and Blackmagic both have Thunderbolt solutions. We're starting to see some of these hard drives. That little hard drive for 120 gigs, I don't know how useful that is for us. But
Andy?
Well, it's all I was going to be saying earlier was that it seems as though you get two circles that don't really overlap with each other. On the one hand, there are a lot of people who are going to need that really ultra high speed connection for whom USB 2.0 isn't good enough, and that's a very special kind of person. I also think that people who can get by forever on 128 gigabytes of storage is also a very special kind of user. The suites really, if you're talking about a minimum of 256, and even then, if you've got someone who did not come into who is not really heart set on getting a Mac, when you tell them that you've got another machine that costs $300 less that can store twice as many pictures and videos, and that it's unlikely that they'll ever really even need to dock an external drive to deal with all the stuff they're dealing with, that's a huge, compelling argument. And when you are introducing them to an operating system that looks and feels in many ways as easy as the Mac, that's the only reason why I'm a little bit uneasy at the idea of Apple switching to SSDs for pretty much the majority of their line. I think that does represent a swing away from we want to make computers to everybody and towards we want to make computers for a specific kind of people that we think we understand, and we understand that these people don't need as much onboard storage as people think they do.
That's what I think. Adam, are you muted, Adam? Because
he shouldn't be muted.
Oh, yes, I am. Sorry.
Ah, okay. Chat room was saying Adam's...
I wasn't saying much either, but...
okay.
Yeah, no, I was trying to be quiet during during the promo, so...
Okay.
I find Thunderbolt a little bit troubling from the standpoint of just... It doesn't... I mean, I totally understand it at the high end where Alex is, but Apple switched to it. I mean, they've switched to it in the MacBook Airs, the 11-inch MacBook Air, and it feels, you need it for the hooking to the Thunderbolt display. But after that, there's just not much there for, as Andy says, the rest of us. And so, if you're going to have a MacBook Air with, constrained local storage, you're really going to need to go
USB.
Get something external.
And it's USB.
Oh, and what we really need is the Thunderbolt to FireWire,
Right. Well, and no one's yet told me. I've never been able to get a really good story on why this is so hard. Yeah, that why are the cables $50? Why is it taking a year to get to having hard drives reliably available? I mean, that's nuts.
Well, and why
is the
technology
industry?
I mean, even the thing that we're missing is a hub. Like what I want is a Thunderbolt that hooks in, and I've got two FireWire connections and three USB connections and even USB 3 connections. I mean, someone needs to build a little box that we can just plug all this stuff into, because it would be, and those are the kind of things that I'm surprised we didn't
have. My sense is that Apple still lacks the market clout to get these companies to solve these problems. They've decided that USB 3 is what they're going to work on, because that's where the massive market is. And so you're not seeing the kind of innovation in Thunderbolt that you would expect, because it's just not a big enough market.
And it's expensive because of the people who buy it. You know, it's the best thing since sliced bread.
You're willing to spend the money. It's your fault, Alex.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone. You can really see why Apple went for it, though. If it were just for the reason that they can take a whole bunch of ports away from their mobile Macs and replace it with this one tiny one that will allow them to continue to make these really low-profile machines, that really is the big win, I think, from Apple to actually do it this way. But I agree. I really thought that by now we'd start seeing displacement of FireWire hard drives, where they were already the machine that the hard drive that very few people were willing to spend an extra $40 to $50 to $75 for. But I would have thought that by now you would see the combo drives, where you can buy the USB version of this for $150, or you can buy the Thunderbolt version of this for $200, and we're not seeing that yet.
Right. We're going to move quickly through a bunch of stories so we can get to our picks of the week. That nano SIM issue continues on. RIM is accusing Apple of cheating. The vote to determine whose nano SIM patent should become the standard has been postponed.
Cheating.
Yes.
Cheating.
Nokia refused to license patents from Apple in exchange for free use of Apple's technology. So the biggies are fighting. RIM said Apple is trying to rig the decision by registering its own personnel as representatives from Bell Mobility, SK Telecom, and KT Corp. Those are Apple's. They've petitioned the standard agency, ETSI, to ensure that proxy voting is not allowed in an effort to get around Apple's cheating. That's pretty nasty. So they want people to show up. No proxy voting. You got to show up, and we got to look you in the eye and say, "Are you an Apple or are you somebody else?"
Let me smell your hair. Smells like strawberries.
You're out. iPhone outsold all other smartphones combined at Sprint and AT&T. Some say that under Tim Cook, this is a Mac Rumors article, Apple's patent war may lead to settlements. This comes from Bloomberg Businessweek, a cover story on the continuing war against Android. The scorched earth policy was established by Steve Jobs, who said, "I will bury you. We will bury you." But people familiar with the situation, according to Businessweek, say top-level executives of both Apple and Samsung have communicated lately about potential settlement options. Apple CEO Tim Cook does not seem to share his predecessor's passion about laying all foes to waste.
There's also, it seems like, it seems consistent that when you see a change of CEO, oftentimes a change of these priorities that once, action like this, which once seemed productive, now no longer seems productive. Remember that when Steve Jobs came in, one of the first things he did was saying that it really doesn't make any sense we're spending so much time and resources suing right. Microsoft, having them sue each other. Let's figure out a way that we can settle these and just get rid of this and move forward.
Yeah, Tim has to find his own grudge.
And they're going to get the hostages released too. Well,
except for you, Leo. You are like
no. You're still on. You're still not going
to. I'm consistent until the end of time. I think that yeah. Steve said, "Hey, Tim, as on his deathbed, Tim, if you want to settle Android, go ahead. But that Leo guy,
do not
under no circumstances ever let him in another event.
He's never going
to
be another
keynote.
Here is
the silver gun and the golden bullet that I had made to shoot him with." Take this charge from my hand.
That's pure self-aggrandizement. Of course, they don't even know who I am. Other stories. Let's see. Sweden joins Australia in complaining about the use of the word 4G and LTE in iPad sales because, of course, it only supports U.S. LTE.
The good news is if you visit the U.S. from Sweden or Australia,
you're
it
set.
Work great.
I think they kind of have a point. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it isn't LTE. It doesn't work on the frequencies in those countries.
It's a mess.
It's a mess. And I can understand on the one hand, Apple doesn't want to make different ads for every country.
Right.
But
maybe, technically it is LTE compatible. Just
US LTE.
What they need is a little disclaimer at the bottom
US
of the
only.
Text. US only.
US only.
And really yes. Quick text.
Probably
have quick
them
speaking.
They probably do. I would guess they do.
Yes.
Not offer not available anywhere except the US of A.
just know the price you pay for not living in the land of the free and
sorry.
The home.
If you lived here,
yes.
You'd be downloaded by now. 98% of iPad owners are satisfied with the device, according to ChangeWave. 98% of the 200 people they asked. And none is very dissatisfied. Well, come
on. The other two dropped them in the bathtub.
Yeah. Do not. Do not. Apple working on, according to a Chinese source, a Japanese website. So the Chinese source tells us that a Japanese website, Makotakara, reported that Apple is working on a 5-inch Retina display device for next year, either 1600 by 960 or 1280 by 960. We don't know. Nah. This is BS. I'm not even going to read anymore. Go to Mac Rumors and you can read about it. Actually, that's from, Apple Insider. Mac Flashback Trojan, you brought it up. You explain it, Adam Engst, tidbits.com.
Yeah, this just doesn't go away. Flashback, I think it first popped up, late last year, and it's morphing like crazy. I shouldn't perhaps say it's morphing. The people who make it are changing it constantly.
They're taking advantage of.
Yeah, right. No, it's not. It's not. That would be even scarier. But nonetheless, it's taking advantage of Java vulnerabilities. It's switched over time which one it's taking advantage of. And the latest one, I believe, I said I haven't got a chance to research this, personally in a significant way yet. But the latest one is, another Java vulnerability. And the antivirus companies are saying, just turn off Java if you don't need it. And, that's pretty annoying. I mean, Apple, obviously, there's new versions of Java that can be installed. Apple needs to get those out. But these people are, the people behind Flashback are moving awfully quickly. And they're pretty good at social engineering, too, in terms of popping up the, fake certificate dialogues. So right. People get people to enter the admin password. And, I'm really frustrated by this because for the longest time, I used to say, look, just pay attention and you won't have any problems. And it's gotten to the point now where the social engineering and the vulnerabilities that can be exploited quickly enough are severe enough to let something like this through that I'm saying, if you're not a relatively sophisticated Mac user, probably should be running some antivirus software. And it pains me to say that in some ways because I sort of the longest time just felt you could be aware and you'd be okay. But I've seen too many people who got caught by Mac Defender or getting caught by Flashback just because they're being normal users and don't know what a proper certificate prompt looks like.
It's unfortunate because while Oracle has updated Java for other platforms, Apple doesn't use Oracle/Sun's Java. They do their own, and Apple has not updated their Java.
Right.
So,
and they need to push one out. And they probably will. Apple has actually been reacting pretty quickly to Flashback, building it into XProtect at the low level in the system and things like that. But they're not the fastest. I mean, Apple is not one of those companies that will turn on a dime. They will consider for a little while, a week to 10 days later, something will come out, which probably is okay. But, certainly for peace of mind, it would be nice if, you had that real sense that, boom, they were on it. But Apple doesn't say anything for the longest time. And then, the fix just sort of appears. Bad stuff.
Turn off Java. If you want to know more about this, F-Secure, which is a very good antivirus and security company, been around for a long time, f-secure.com, has a long article on what Flashback does, how to detect it, what to look for. Now, here's the good news. As far as anybody knows, Flashback, the only thing Flashback does is it modifies content displayed by your web browser. It's not like it's, it doesn't seem to be doing anything too nasty.
Previous versions could report information back.
Oh, okay. So maybe that capability persists.
So I haven't looked into this new version closely yet, but it's not really bad, in terms of it's going to destroy, delete your hard disk or anything like that, but it was not a good one.
So for my grandmother and others who want to know how to do this, open your terminal and enter the command. Oops, let's not install an update. We'll do that later. Enter the command /defaults/read/applications/%browser.app/content/show. It's at ls environment. And then see, now it doesn't even exist for me. But that's good. If it does exist, then you're infected. So anyway.
Well, and to be
that's an easy
clear
check.
Also,
anybody can run at home.
the variants have been coming so quickly, you know, one every 2 to 4 weeks, that that check may work now, but it may not work in 2 weeks, too.
That's why you morph a virus, of course.
Yeah. Precisely. And so, you know, for a while it was using four character names in a particular folder. And now there's so many of them that you can't possibly tell if they're real or not. So, yeah, the big solution is go into your browser and go into the preferences and turn off Java for the moment.
Yeah.
And be very, very careful if anything that you asks you for your admin password when you didn't just ask for something to install.
Ugh. That's kind of hard advice to give people, you know.
It is. Do you know? It sucks. Yeah.
What I'm telling people is this is another reason why you need to have two browsers installed at the same time. The one that you use all the time is the one that you have Java turned off completely. And then when there are a couple of instances in which you actually, when you hit a website where it really does insist that you have the Java plugin working, then you switch over. That's when you finally launch Chrome or you finally launch this other browser that has it enabled. Do that one thing you have to do with it and then quit it again.
So what do you do if your house is robbed, crooks steal $350,000 worth of stuff from you, and you're 8 years old?
$350,000?
Yeah. You turn on Find My iPad like this 8-year-old did, and he catched the burglar. He catched him. 8-year-old uses, this is the Today Show. This is his dad. We can listen to a little bit. I don't think they'll...
Just driving through, whatever.
So, and they broke in.
And you lost a lot of items, a couple of iPads, bought a new one with the insurance money. Landon, you didn't like the idea of your stuff being taken. What made you decide to look on the internet and discover there's an app for that?
He's 8 years old.
I don't really know. I just wanted to find my iPad, so I just looked it up and I found this app.
You found this app?
He used Find My iPad. He 8 years old. He found his iPad.
And you got to turn it on first. He must have been ready for it. I think he's sandbagging us.
He's sandbagging us. The clearly the Today Show guy has no idea that this is on the Mac.
Yeah.
How did you find an app to do that? You're an idiot, so I'm just going to play along, but anybody who has an iPad knows you just have Find My iPad turned on.
And point where your old iPad was. What did you see on the map?
There's a tech guy on the right there who's going
to
help him.
Well, it just showed a big building, so when you went to the satellite view, it showed like a hotel. And when you zoomed in, you could tell it was the Ambassador Inn.
Krista, did you believe him right away?
I didn't even know about it until I got home from work, and I was amazed.
And so, Richard, you guys called the police and said, look, that this thing is pinging here. And they took
pinging.
It seriously.
Oh, I like how he used that technical term there.
Yes, sir. They found, from what we're hearing, from over $350,000 worth of stuff just in that room. They're linking it to maybe a couple hundred.
That's great. I love that story. Yeah, they actually brought on a specialist in speaking tech.
Yes.
So that he could explain... Well, you see, it's very simple here. You just turn this switch here and it...
Reward it found. I'll just do this really fast. Yeah, reward found. And
I'm going to send. I'm going to show you how you do that.
And it's all set to send. And you can hear it instantly.
Look, see, it pings.
And no matter where
it's
that
pinging
is,
right
see,
now.
Computers see the world as they say, ones and zeros.
This is known as the binomial theorem.
And now you know why Twit is not on broadcast television, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, we have to have a translator.
I will say that that is the first thing that I do when I hit, when I buy a new iPhone.
Turn
or
it
iPad,
on.
Is I turn that on because the thing I use the most actually is to know where my iPhone is. Get it to do that, make that noise.
Yeah.
Like, where is my iPhone? And I just go up my laptop and I hit it and I hear it buried because my kids like put it under some books.
So iPad, he's pointing out that wasn't all Landon's $350,000.
Right.
That was other people's stuff too. They found it all. But Landon, the 8-year-old, is a smart one.
And for the criminals watching, that's what you get
for
stealing an iPhone, an Apple device.
Yeah, don't steal Apple device.
Oh, you can't steal that. That's an Apple device. Yes. They'll track you.
That's good. We should like create that feeling in the world. Now, Ashton Kutcher to play Steve Jobs? Who cares? I don't care. Go ahead. Knock yourself out, Ashton. They just basically anybody with stringy hair and a bad beard could play Steve Jobs.
Anybody, it'd probably be a pretty good likeness.
This is an indie pick, by the way, indie movie. This is not.
He doesn't speak or act. He should be very fine.
He should be fine.
Have I told you about Twitter?
I'm sorry. We're just jealous because he has 18 billion followers on Twitter. Apple increases
some of his $18 billion.
Yeah, he's also
it is right. Someone pointed out
better looking
on the chat that you know.
Tom Cruise would actually make a good Steve Jobs.
He's got the energy.
Right.
That's why.
The whole thing.
Is
that he
it's not the look. It's the energy.
Yeah. Problem is it would just be too Tom Cruise-y.
Yeah. He'd be Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
He the guy Tom Cruise played in Magnolia, he played like a...
Motivational speaker.
Yeah.
Pacing the stage with a headset. And,
perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect. Apple is going to increase the iAd revenue to 70%. They're trying to get more people to use iAd. I don't see a lot of iAds. Do you?
No, because you have to have 100,000. Well, now you have to have 100,000. You just have to have a half million to advertise on it. I mean, right. I think that that's. I mean,
and I let Apple do your design,
right?
Which is really overdoing it.
There's a bottleneck for you.
Yeah. No, we'll take care of that. You know that gradient, it's just not right. Can we help you? The yellow is just a little bit too hot.
Ain't no gloss like an Apple gloss, because an Apple gloss goes, hey.
All right, we're going to take it.
So glad I switched just in time.
Oh, that was classic. That's better than a squirrel.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break and come back with your picks of the week, gentlemen. Prepare. Start your pick engines. I got a good one.
Oh, I got a good one, too.
You got an interesting one.
I got a couple.
You got more than one?
Well, I got a software.
And I promise I'll bring that SSD in next week so we can play with
it. Okay. I'll test it.
Would you? Because what I'd like to... I've been downloading... I found a good testing program to test throughput. So I want to compare it to the SSD built in to my iMac and the Apple SSDs built in my iMac and Air, the hard drive on my Mac Pro, and then the throughput on the Mac Pro when I use... Oh, I can't do it on... See, if I had Thunderbolt on a Mac Pro...
This is why we're all waiting.
Can't. So this portion of the fine program is brought to you by Audible.com. Oh, we love Audible. It is the ultimate in audio bookstores. First thing I do, what do you think? What do you think the first thing I do is I put my Audible app on here, but then I download all my books on here because I cannot live... without my Audible books on my iPhone, my iPad, my Android phone. That app is so great, the Audible app. I have, I've been an Audible subscriber since 2000, the 00, since practically the turn of the century, and have hundreds of books on there, and I just love it. And there's hundreds more. The variety.
Sacre bleu.
I finished the Game of Thrones, the Clash of Kings, before the show, because I didn't want to, I wanted to read it before I saw it.
Really? Does that make it better?
Yeah. I don't want to ruin it. I watched Game of Thrones on Sunday, and I thought, if you didn't read the book, would you even have any idea what's going on? There's a lot of going on, a lot of people. You couldn't follow that. You think not?
I had some issues, but thankfully Tom filled me in. But,
so you didn't read the book?
No, but there was characters that came in, and I'm
It's like, who's confused. He? Where'd he come from?
Yeah.
What's
Love
that?
Him,
but
if you read it beforehand, your brain can't stop by saying, oh, well, it looks like the Aragorn was part of the raiding party after all. I didn't know that.
Yes.
I thought that he was off in Narvelheim.
Number of things happened like that as well. In fact, I thought, wow, they went through half the book in 1 hour. They really skim along. So if you want really all the color and the detail, and it's just a beautiful book. That's a great one. But I know, Andy, you've got a book for us.
I got one that I'm really, really enjoying. Now, there's some odd punctuation here. Apparently, the title of the book is "Tufts Hit: Life Advice from the Fat Lazy Slob Who Did Good." It is a memoir by Kevin Smith of Chasing Amy fame, of Clerks fame, of Smodcast fame, and it is. I think it's sort of been mislabeled. It's being promoted as sort of a self-help guide to saying how to motivate yourself and find your dream and live the life you want to live. There really isn't much about this book that would land him a spot on Oprah, even on the OWN network where there's no audience. It really is like if you're a fan of his work. You'll find that this is sort of like a greatest hits package of his Q&A sessions, his podcasts, his interviews. He tells some stories you've heard before, some stories you've never heard before, but it's all being read by him. And he sometimes goes off the script to sort of give you sort of parenthetical stuff.
See, that's one advantage of doing the Audible book. Compared to the print book,
and he is a hell of a great storyteller. I was a fan of his from his early films, after watching his later films, you sort of come to appreciate that he's just a guy who's really good at telling stories, and that movies just happen to be the first outlet that he used to use that skill with. And to be honest, there are parts of it which will sort of feel like a kick in the pants. because he does talk about how he was at a certain point of his life where he's like, you know what, if even if I go $27,000 in debt making this movie, I want to be a loser who has a completed film in the closet. I don't want to be a loser who just stayed a loser into his 30s and 40s. So it's entertaining, it's instructive, but start to finish, it is another one of those circle the neighborhood for a couple of times because you want to get to the end of this part of the story.
I'm about
three quarters of the way through it right now. I'm glad that early on you do get to hear the story, an entire chapter of working with Bruce Willis.
Oh my goodness.
on that cop movie.
He told that story at Macworld, that's worth the whole book. I mean, it was so funny. Anyway.
And I'm sure there's a strong language throughout, so this is not one for people who don't like strong language.
The fact that the title is not exactly Tough Spit.
Life advice from a fat...
And then a space, then the word hit. Oh, wait, well, they did edit it that way. But I choose, in honor of Penn Jillette, who every time he has to talk about...
Oh, his show, Bullspit.
His cable show, he always refers to it as Bull's Hit.
Good.
So he can get away with it without getting the explicit tag. Yeah, this is Tuff's Hit.
It's all about the syllabification.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
You just get squeak in. You found that top corner of the net, and you got your goal in there.
Nothing but net on that one.
Great, great one. It's probably one of my favorite audiobooks of the past 6 months.
There you go. Can't wait. So here's the deal: you get this for free if you go to audible.com/MacBreak. You'll sign up for the gold account. You get a credit. Pick any book, one credit book, and you're going to love it. And you can cancel anytime. Pay no price, and keep the book forever. So it's a free book. It's a good deal. I have a feeling you're going to stick around. In fact, I got a tweet from somebody who said, you know, you really shouldn't be doing Audible ads. I used to listen to your podcast until I found Audible. Now I don't listen to your shows at all.
I think that's the point.
There is a little risk. There is a little risk here, but I don't care. I love Audible, and I'm glad to tell anybody about it. Plays on every device you've got, and it's easy to use, and you get the book right away, which is a real plus for me. Audible.com/MacBreak. Try it free right now. Tell them Leo sent you. I go, who? All right, let's get our picks, and we got to do this fairly quick. We're going to start with Adam Angst of tidbits.com. That's a good pick right there. You must subscribe.
We try.
Yes.
Well, my pick this week is Cloudpull 2.0 from Golden Hill Software. And what Cloudpull does is that it backs up all your data in Google to your Mac. Mm. So, I mean, let's face it, your calendars, probably not a huge deal. You can sync those to iCal or whatever. Your contacts, again, there's ways of getting those synced. Gmail, probably you want to be using Apple Mail or another IMAP client. But the real trick is Google Docs. At this point, some people have a ton of Google Docs, and those things do not exist anywhere else. And so Cloudpull, what it does is you give it your Google account credentials so that it can log in, and it goes and just constantly looks at your Google account and sucks in all the data. For Google Docs, it transfers documents to Microsoft Word documents, spreadsheets to Excel documents, presentations to PowerPoint, and so on. It brings in everything. So if you have other types of documents you've uploaded to Google Docs over time, it'll bring those in. I actually do recommend that you use Apple Mail instead of Cloudpull for backing up your Gmail if you use Gmail's web interface, because Cloudpull 2.0 is really, really slow to bring in your first IMAP backup if you do turn that on. I have 300,000 or 400,000 messages, and it took like 10 days to bring in my entire mail store. But for documents, it's quick. It works. They're on your Mac. It even saves versions. So if you change a file on Google Docs, you can actually see the different versions in Cloudpull on your Mac and get them back as different versions. So it's a brilliant little app. And for anyone who's doing significant work in Google Docs, $25 is well worth it for the peace of mind and getting that actual backup locally where you can always get at it.
We should point out that Google does offer this for free. I mean, they're using a Google API, but it's just it's a pain to do it because you have to do it one by one. If you go to google.com/takeout, this is basically, Cloudpull is using this API to pull all this stuff down. But you can, if you go to takeout, you can get you can create an archive of all your data. Just can't do anything with it.
Cloudpull's doing it constantly.
Right. So that's the other thing.
Boom, you've got
it's
it.
Every hour.
It's
they do it.
It's like Time Machine for Google Docs.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good idea. Cloudpull from GoldenHillSoftware.com. Thank you, Adam. Alex Lindsay.
your pick of the week.
Can you just do one?
Okay, fine.
Save it for next week. You don't have to use everything all at once.
Next week.
Do I need to give you a camera?
Yeah, you need a camera.
All right, hold on.
Yeah, I agree with this. You can do both. But just do them quick. I love this one. We picked this. This was Sarah's app cap on iPad today. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Can you see me?
Hold on.
We're working on it.
So while she's talking, I'll talk about the other one.
Yeah.
I just got this, and this is the Mophie Power Station.
Oh, that's I thought it was a case. Oh, so it's not a case.
This is a case, and here's why it's useful is because you can plug it into your iPad.
And it's enough to juice it?
Yeah. So it's 4,000 milliamps. And it is, you know, I have to admit, I spend a lot of time on the road, as you might know. And so I have two cases that I usually have. And once they're charging right now because I'm about to go on the road again. But
that's one.
Mophie power station.
Power station.
Now that we have
okay.
the overhead here, and I can find my. This is something.
Pull it up a little more. There we go.
That.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that. Good. Paper. So this is paper. And it's made by, is it 53 by 53. And it is so it's free, it's a free download, but then you have to buy the pens, which are $1.99 each.
Although if you get all of them, I think it's $8 for the full set.
Yeah, it's fine.
So think
it's
of it as an $8 app because the truth is you're going to have to buy the pens.
The performance on this is outstanding. I mean,
it's beautiful.
So you can sit here and draw like this, and I can set it up here, and then
make
I can
it bigger because we can hardly see that. It's very light.
Make draw big.
Yeah, or more colorful.
Thicker. Oh yeah. So here I'll use something more. So that
we can see it. And see, notice how it gets fat at the end.
Yeah,
feels like it's pressure sensitive. I don't know how they're doing that.
It's a very lively line.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really you know make my little jet. So anyway, so the little missile. There you go. It's one of the most fluid ones that I played with, and you know what I'm doing. The pen that I'm using right now comes free with it, so you can do little sketches, and then you've got all kinds of you've got a pen that and one of the things that I'm really touchy about is A, that you don't see bisecting of the lines with a drawing app, and B, how quickly is it going to follow my finger or my pen or whatever? And this performance is really really good, and then you slide this up to get other ones. This is kind of a watercolor, so anyway I love it. It's very very cool. So that's
see
it.
That was paper. Good. You did two.
Look at that.
Two like in that. The time of that would take a normal mortal to do a half. And you even did a free product.
Aren't you proud of me?
I'm impressed.
There was one that I was going to show. It was a little more expensive.
Well, we could save the one Alex products for another time. So. You did mention the expensive Thunderbolt drive.
Yes.
Andy Yanako, your pick of the week, sir.
My pick of the week is a really cool app that was fun to research. It's by MotionX, the people who make my favorite GPS app, navigation app for the iPhone. It's called MotionX Sleep. And it does two things. It does two things. Number one, it's a pedometer app. So if you want to use it to try to make your goal of walking 10,000 paces throughout the day, you can do that. But the really cool thing is that it is an alarm clock program that waits to listen to see, well, what is his periods of activity while he's sleeping? What is his periods of actual restfulness? I'm going to wake him up at the time when he can be optimally feel refreshed when he wakes up. And you can do that by either, you can actually wear it on an armband for the first few nights. Kept my iPhone like in the pocket of my pajamas when I was sleeping. But actually, if you just keep it like next to you on the bed, the rocking motion of like when you're just sort of tossing and turning, that's enough to sort of tell it, okay, there's motion going on. It really does work incredibly well. It's easy to track how you're sleeping. You can tell it how long you wish to sleep, how much restful sleep you want to get. And it really does work. Now, I've only been using it for about a week and a half, 2 weeks now. It came out just a couple of weeks ago. But I have to say that the nights when I wake up because the alarm woke me up at the time that I have to wake up, there's a time when that's the only way I'd wake up, and I said, oh God, I can't believe I gotta get out of bed right now. There are nights when I'm actually sleeping less than I did then, but still feeling great. Let's start making waffles. No, let's make waffle and pancakes. No, waffles, pancakes, and an omelet. Great, let's go. So it's 99 cents. It's definitely worthwhile a try. Give it a week. See how well it clicks into how you spend your resting and waking moments, and you might be a little bit surprised at how big of an impact it'll have by the end of the week.
It's a lot cheaper than the Up Band, which also uses MotionX, which is $99 and broke.
The only tip is you probably want to have it plugged in. You want to have your phone plugged in and charging while it's there. So that's why I fortunately have like a power strip on my, the shelf on my headboard, so it's no problem there. Because it will burn through some battery while you're sleeping.
We showed on iPad today, and I'd refer you to it, the Renew Alarm Clock, which does the same thing. It actually is a little bit more sophisticated. It's using sonar ultrasound to track your breathing and your movements, but you have to buy a $200 alarm clock, then plug the iPhone into it or the iPad, and then it has the software and all of that stuff.
So how does it know how to go into married couple mode and not to...
It looks at who's closest. So
that's why it turns on the voice recorder.
Only one of you gets it. Yeah.
No, but
having worn a bunch of this stuff in the past, it's kind of distracting and annoying. So it's nice to just have the clock be watching you. but at $200 is a little pricey. So that's the Renew Clock. And watch iPad today because we did a whole pick. Hey, Andy Yannacco, I want to thank you. Chicago Sun-Times, his website, www.cwob.com. Great to have you on board and your little squirrel friend.
Appreciate research, it. Son. Research.
Research. Adam Engst and Tanya do that fantastic thing we call tidbits, and they've been doing it for a long time, tidbits.com. It's free. You might as well get it. I don't know why, you know, ad-supported media. How does that work?
It's never going to work.
We've also switched to what's ad-supported and members.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you did that.
Pick an Apple up there, there. It's become a Tidbits member. We've got close to 2,000 members, and that's been huge for us.
Yes, I'm so glad you did that. And we have, in fact, that was a pick, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Was it Andy, I think?
Thank you.
Yeah. Join. You don't have to, but do. Tidbits.com. Thank you, Adam. Great to have you here. Really appreciate
always.
It. Alex Lindsay, don't be a stranger. He's traveling through. So thought he'd sit down for a minute.
Yeah, you're not on next week, are you?
He's going somewhere else. Yeah. Where are you going next week?
I'm going to be in New York tomorrow.
Next week. That's nice. That'll be fun. Pixelcore.com for that great guild of multimedia artists who work and learn together. Pixelcore.tv for the podcasts. Follow Alex on Twitter, Alex Lindsay. You can see where he is this week.
We actually have some new podcast coming out next month.
What's that?
We're going to do a variety of different ones. We're going to rebuild up Gear Media Tech. We're also possibly doing one on live streaming. We're trying to sort out that piece.
Oh,
and then finally one on really like web presence, you know, because we do a lot of that. So figuring out how to rig up your system. So
thank you for being here. Thank you all for joining us. We do this show every 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, every Tuesday on twit.tv. But you don't have to watch live because we make audio and video available, as you know. For download, just subscribe and join. And, of course, if you're into the iPad, I have mentioned a couple of times with Sarah Lane and I do iPad Today every Thursday afternoon, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time. And that's a great show if you're an iPad user. But we do a lot of iOS stuff. Sometimes we'll even do stuff that's not iPad-specific but iPhone-specific. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.